Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The old book. Well, I was in the local library and I got a bit bored. It was pouring down rain and I wasn't walking home in that. So I went down the oldest aisle where they kept all the books that were practically ruins. There was a small book at the end of the shelf, and I only just noticed it. I could have missed it easily, but I didn't. I picked it up and felt a slight breeze on my left shoulder. It was made by an amateur, you could tell, and I thought it looked really old, older than it was. But then I opened the front page, and in italic writing, which was hardly legible, it said 1667. I then flicked the page over to find what I thought was a recipe for spells. I managed to make out the title, Birth of Plague. It then said, Unleash Pain and Terror. A librarian walked past, so I stopped her and said, How can you have books like this in here? She looked at the book as if she's never seen it before. I don't remember that book being here. Come with me. She led me to the staff area in the library where there was a woman drinking coffee. Janet, what's this book about? The librarian said to the woman. She stared at it in shock, then slowly took it out of the librarian's hands and looked through it. From my instincts, I would say it's a witchcraft book made by an old witch. We all sat down before our shaky legs collapsed. I think this is the book which went missing in 1934. She then explained that the book had been in the library since it was built, but it went missing and never came back. Everyone who took the book always managed to return it, but never to physically do it, meaning someone took it back for them. What the heck? They let me take the book out to research it. The sun had come out finally and there was a rainbow. I came back to my apartment and sat down and read through it. It spoke of curses, raising the dead, and summoning the Dark Prince. When I read through it, I noticed there were drops of blood to represent the page numbers, and to me it looked like the animal blood, but who knows? I have never tried to use the black magic in this book, and the more I think about it, I think I made the right decision. I have always heard the stories of a woman that prowled the Higginson Highway. I never once believed any of them until the night I almost died. It was October of 2009. I was traveling home from a friend's house around 11:45 p.m. The road was dark as the street lights were not working. I was traveling at about 120 kilometers per hour when suddenly my SUV started to lose power. The speed kept dropping until it reached 60 kilometers per hour. A car hooted and flashed his headlights at me as I was traveling in the fast lane, so I moved over to the left lane for him to pass. Suddenly, I saw the man break in his lane and I got distracted and veered off the road onto the yellow lane. I was so shocked that my SUV completely stalled. By this time, it was a few minutes before midnight. I tried to start my car, but it just went dead. My headlights didn't even work. So here I was sitting on the Higginson with a dead SUV and a dead cell phone battery. I saw a vehicle approaching, so I got off quickly and flagged it down. The lady was kind enough to stop to help me. She said she didn't have a cell phone, but she lived not too far from where we were and that she didn't mind towing me to her house where I could phone my family to come and get me. So she tied the tow rope to my SUV and we drove off. She took me to a big double-story white house that was situated at the corner of a dead-end road. I got off and she insisted that I come in and get warm and phone my family. So after much convincing, I went in. She gave me a jacket to wear and let me use her phone to call home. I tried, but no one answered, and I started to panic. So the lady said that I should leave my car there, and she would take me home. So I said okay. After the 30-minute drive home, I found that my parents were not home, so I had to let myself in. The next day, my dad and I went to the lady's house to tow my SUV back. When we arrived at the big white house, my SUV was gone. So I went to the door and knocked, and no one answered. So panic-stricken, I went to the next-door neighbor to ask if they knew where the lady of the house was. What I heard next was something I will never forget. A man came to the door and said that Sheila lived in that house, but she had died over 22 years ago. The house had been empty for almost 5 years after her family had moved. According to the man, Sheila was traveling on the Higginson one night when she had a breakdown and someone came racing past her and ran her over. She died on the scene. To this day, I never found my SUV and I still have her jacket that she gave me that night to keep warm. The Haunted Cottage. Hi, I'm Jen and I'm going to tell you the story of what happened to me and my boyfriend on that fateful day that we went to see his family's cottage. It was a regular day, and to most people, it wouldn't have been special, but it was to me and my boyfriend. That day signified that we had gone out for a whole year. Chris, my boyfriend, had told me the night before that he had a special surprise for me to celebrate our one-year anniversary. I was excited and tried to get him to tell me what it was. "You'll find out tomorrow morning," he said, and I could hear the smile in his voice. "Oh, come on, Chris, tell me now." "Nope, you'll see tomorrow. Just be ready at 8 when I come to pick you up." "Fine," I said, laughing. "Now I can't wait." He laughed and said, "Well, I better let you get to sleep. We have a big day tomorrow. Good night." "Night," I replied. "I love you. Love you too." We hung up and I got ready for bed. I was awake half the night wondering what Chris's big surprise was, but finally I fell asleep. My alarm clock went off at 6:30 the next morning. I yawned and rolled over to press the snooze button as I did every morning, until I remembered what day it was, our one-year anniversary. I jumped up and headed to the bathroom. "Mom, hurry up," I called at the door. Soon the door opened and I darted inside. I showered faster than I ever had before and got ready. Then I grabbed my big purse and threw a change of clothes and my bathing suit inside, since Chris had told me I'd need them. It seemed like 8 a.m. would never come. I waited and waited and finally heard the telltale noise of his 20-year-old car coming up the driveway. Soon there was a knock on the door and Chris stood there, smiling. He kissed me and said, "Ready to go?" "Yeah," I said, and followed him out to his car. We drove for about an hour and Chris stubbornly refused to tell me where we were going. Soon, however, we came to a dirt road that led into a forest. On the other side of the trees, you could see the water of a sparkling blue lake. We drove down this road for about 10 minutes and then stopped in front of a little cottage. There were other cottages surrounding it, and there was a direct path down to the beach and the lake beyond. The view was beautiful. I couldn't say anything. It was too amazing. He had brought me to a cottage to spend the night. He grinned. "Well, what do you think? I borrowed it from Mom and Dad for the weekend. They just bought it and haven't come down here yet. And I asked for it, and they said yes. How's this for an anniversary?" It's beautiful," I said, looking at him and throwing my arms around his neck. He kissed me and we headed in. 10 minutes later, we were on the beach. It was a beautiful sunny day and the water in the lake was warm. We splashed around and laughed like kids for a couple of hours and then headed up onto the beach to sit in the sun. As we were doing that, a man with two kids came over down to the beach. He saw us, smiled, and headed over. "I thought I saw someone pulling next door this morning," he said. "It's good to see people there again. After the Joneses," he looked sad. "They were good people. They didn't deserve what happened to them." Chris looked confused. "What happened to the Joneses?" he asked the man. "Well, I don't want to scare you away, but I'm not going to lie to you. No one really knows what happened to them. There were four of them, Jack and Janet Jones, and their two children, Jamie and Jackie. The kids used to come over to my cottage every day to play with my kids. But that day, they didn't come over. I knew something was up. Those kids always came over, mark my words. So I decided to investigate. The car was in the driveway, so I knew they were still there. I banged on the door, but there was no answer. That was weird, so I tried the doorknob. Strangely enough, it was unlocked. That surprised me. The Joneses always locked their door, even though there was no one around. So I walked in. That's where I found all four of them, laying in their beds, looks of terror upon their faces. They were cold. You could tell they'd been dead for a while. I just don't know how they died. It was like they were scared to death by someone or something. The man walked away, and I looked at Chris, and he laughed. I was surprised. "You don't believe that, do you?" "Well," I said, "it could be true." He laughed again. "Jenna, you watch too much TV." I tried to put it out of my mind as we spent the rest of the day on the beach. But when we went back to the cottage for supper and to go to bed, I was scared. Before we turned in, I double-checked that the doors and windows were locked. and then made Chris do the same. He laughed and told me I was crazy, but I didn't care. We headed to bed and I heard a crash from the other side of the room. I looked at Chris. Did you hear that? Yeah, he said, getting up to look. He gasped as he realized that the window was shattered, but what scared me was the fact that none of the glass was in the cottage. It was like it had been broken from the inside, but that was impossible. We kept hearing strange noises until about 3 a.m, but the second that I closed my eyes, I saw the most horrific thing I have ever seen. It was so foul that I will not describe it, because the description will kill you. I let out a scream at the same time that Chris did. As I opened my eyes, I started to say, "Did you see?" I stopped mid-sentence because, to my horror, the thing I had seen was still there, even when I had my eyes open. As I looked at it, it grew more and more terrifying, and it said, "Don't tell me you're going to die." Then it cackled evilly and let out a roar. Chris and I both screamed at the same time, then I blacked out. When I came to, I felt strange and I heard voices. "I warned them," the man from the next door said, looking over our bodies. "Wait a minute, how could I be here and there at the same time?" I looked around me and saw Chris too. He looked at me and said, "I'm sorry, I should have listened to you and got out of here when we had the chance. The guy warned us and we didn't listen, and now..." He trailed off and looked at me sadly. "I'm sorry, Jen, we're dead." I gasped. I didn't think it was possible, that is, until I flew through the wall. Since that day, Chris and I have lived in that cabin with our new friends, the Joneses. We have decided that we are going to try to make that cabin safe for the next owners, somehow. I mean, there's 6 of us and only 1 of him, right? Well, that's the story of the cabin. I figured I should tell it, because who better to tell it than a ghost? My grandmother's haunted house. Not too long ago, I had gone to Mexico and experienced some weird stuff at my grandmother's house, and all in just a short weekend. We left our Texas home at about 7:30 a.m. on a Friday and got to Mexico 3 hours later at about 11:30. Once getting to my grandma's, we dumped our bags in one of the rooms we were going to stay overnight in and went back to the truck to visit my other grandmother and meet up with some friends we were going to the plaza with. The whole day was spent on the street, heading from store to store, house to house, which immediately resulted in me getting car sick, so my mom dropped me off at my grandmother's vacant house and left again to do some other errands. At first, nothing happened and everything seemed completely normal until after I woke up from a long nap. In the middle of my sleep, things started to feel fishy and I couldn't help but sense that I was not alone in the room. I awoke, hoping that it was mom who was home getting dinner ready, because I was starving, but unfortunately, I was alone. I just shrugged things off and turned on the TV. I switched through the only 3 channels that are available and on the air if you don't have cable, and then just left on a soccer game. While I watched as one of the guys made a goal, I could faintly hear a door to another part of the house opening and then slowly reclosing. I didn't waste a thought on it and continued to watch the game. And once I again heard the door opening, but this time it was not only accompanied by the sound of it closing, but I could hear heavy footsteps slowly heading toward the kitchen. At this, I was officially creeped out. I turned off the TV and headed to the kitchen to see who else was in the house. I remembered looking in every single room in the house, and not in one did I find anyone. All the fans in the house were off, all the windows were locked closed, so air couldn't have blown any door open or closed. There was not any electrical thing that was on that could have caused the footsteps, and they sounded too heavy to be of natural explanation. I dismissed it as my imagination and went into the kitchen to see if there was anything to eat in the fridge. This time, as I opened the door to the refrigerator, I saw, out of the corner of my eye, something white and foggy whoosh by faster than anything you could imagine. I dropped and broke a glass bottle of Coke that I was holding and didn't bother to clean it up. I was just too scared to death. I ran out of that house faster than you can say ghost. The 2 nights I spent at my other grandmother's house and didn't dare step another foot into the haunted one. The weird thing is that my parents or my other siblings have not ever experienced anything weird or paranormal at that house yet. But they should watch out. because maybe it's their turn next. The ghosts in the new house. My house is not very old, only 20 years or so, but I have noticed a lot of unusual activity. Only two families before mine lived inside the house, and only one person ever died inside the house. However, you would think about four or five spirits live inside the walls of my house. The first signs of activity came when my family first moved in. For about the first 6 months, my dad would wake up in the middle of the night because something was shaking his leg. This happened fairly randomly, but never more than once a night. After living in the house for around 6 months, my dad never had his leg shaken again. He has had no problems since then with his leg shaking randomly, day or night. The only other time he has had his leg shaken was the night that someone broke into his truck, which he didn't learn about until the next day. Another more unusual ghostly sighting is what my friends described as a mist appearing to manifest from under my bedroom door, rise to the ceiling, float over to my bed, and hover over them for a few seconds, and then retreat to the door and disappear straight through it. At first, only one of my friends saw the mist. After seeing it in the middle of the night multiple times, he finally told me about it. He said he never felt threatened and never woke me up because of that. One night, he attempted to wake me up in time to see it, but as he shook me, he said the mist began to retreat again. I woke up and noticed that an unusual smell was in the room. It smelled fruity like a perfume, but I had no idea how the smell had gotten into my room. Initially, I didn't believe my friend, as he had a tendency to make up stories, but one night, another one of my friends stayed over and saw the same thing, with the same movement and everything. Again, however, he felt no need to wake me and did not feel threatened. Four of my friends claimed to have seen the same mist. I have never seen the mist personally, but the smell left behind is very noticeable, sometimes even into the morning hours. The only other occurrence that would be very reliable would be my former brother-in-law's sighting in the night. During a particularly violent thunderstorm in which there was a power outage, he was startled awake by the lights on the entertainment center. Due to the sudden surge of the lights on the console, which were flickering on and off in random patterns, he laid on the couch and watched the lights until he noticed something out of the corner of his eye. He looked to the right, and in the middle of the living room was a woman. She had her head wrapped in a towel and was in a white robe. At first, he thought it was my mother, but then he saw that she was levitating a few inches above the floor. Around her feet was what he said appeared to be a misty cloud that was very thin and stayed close to the floor below her. After several seconds of watching this woman, she turned and looked directly at him. She stared at him for a few seconds and then slowly disappeared. Those were the big events that have happened. Of course, the usual bangs and creaks in the nights are expected, but since the recent hurricane, the activity has escalated a bit. The recent remodeling we had to do obviously angered the former owner's spirit, and since the rebuilding stopped, the activity has died down a bit. But then again, you never know when it's going to start up. The Captain's Ghost. When I was growing up, I lived in Texas. I lived in a small town, and there were some useful spots on Main Street. One night, something happened that made me have nightmares for a week. My friends and I went off-road go-karting at around 6 at night. We were near an old World War II plane refueling station. One of my friends tried to start his truck, but it wouldn't. Then out of nowhere, a man with sunglasses and brown hair, smoking a cigar, comes walking by and says, "It's getting late. You'd better start heading for home." "We can't," I said. "Our truck won't start." "Let me help you," said the man. "I used to work on the Spitfires and Mustangs." "You don't look that old," I said. "Well, I need help too," said the man. "My plane went down as I was trying to land at the service station over there." "How'd it go down?" I asked. "German recon planes." "Come again," I said. "There hasn't been any recon planes since World War II. We're at peace with the Germans." Then we heard a mysterious shout from the old service station. "No one has been there since the 1930s, I said. After that, I heard a plane engine in the distance, then machine gun fire. I quickly got up and hit my head on the open truck bed I was under. The last thing I saw was the man falling to the ground dead, and I was knocked out. I woke up and it was dawn, and where the man had been standing There was nothing but a grave marker that said, "Here lies Captain Christopher Robinson, born 1889, died 1941. The Haunted Chair. I really don't even know how to begin with this thing. It's a strange story that goes back to heaven knows when. It's about a chair that's called the Santa Chair. I'm not sure when it was made or where it is from. The truth is, I've only heard a story and I've seen a few strange things happen with this thing, but man, it's a trippy story. The Santa Chair has claimed 13 lives. That is, 13 people have died while sitting in the chair. I have a list of names if you're interested. The list is not complete. The chair can't be photographed, clearly. I have other pictures and all of them are a bit strange. The first picture is from, what I'm told, 1925. Now, before you scream, photoshopped, I have a second pic of the original picture itself. I also have 10 or so more photos. All of them have little things that are just plain weird. You can take pics of it, but none of them ever seem to be clear. People have pointed out a great many strange things in the old photo. I can kind of see some of them, others I can't see at all. People also see strange things in the new photos. Again, I can kind of see some of them and not others. But that's just the half of it. There's a big old story that goes along with it. A lot of it seems kind of far-fetched to me. For that matter, pretty much all of it is far-fetched to me. The short story I got from my fiancé's mom. I might add that I thought it looked cool and she seemed eager to give it to me. My fiancé's mom claimed that it was around her whole life. My fiancé herself hates the thing, and I mean really hates the thing. She won't go in the room with it, so it sits in a room all by itself that we almost never use. We throw a box or two in there now and then to store. When I say we, I mean me. Here are the facts I know. 1. Nobody has a clue why it's called the Santa Chair. 2. Light bulbs burn out very fast in the room it's in. 3. I have two more photos from what I'm told is 1925 of the chair. They are both odd. 4. Often, a picture of it won't turn out at all. I have a ton of blurry pics where you can see next to nothing. 5. Many of my friends feel strange when they enter the room and only see the back of the chair. 6. I was told to never sell the chair, but I'd be happy to sell it. I have a few people interested in it now, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure I am going to sell it. 7. My kitty died in the chair. I miss him. 8. I sat in the chair once and had a coughing fit for whatever reason. 9. The chair is in almost perfect shape, even to this day. For the record, I'm not a paranormalist. I don't believe in ghosts or aliens or any of that crap. People might think I'm full of bull, and that's okay. I really couldn't blame them. In closing, to me, it's just a strange little tale, and you gotta admit, it's a scary-looking little chair. And even if I don't believe in it, I still can't resist a good mystery. The story of Bloody Mary. She lived deep in the forest in a tiny cottage and sold herbal remedies for a living. Folks living in the town nearby called her Bloody Mary and said she was a witch. None dared cross the old crone for fear that their cows would go dry, their food stores rot away before winter, their children take sick of the fever, or any number of terrible things that an angry witch could do to her neighbors. Then the little girls in the village began to disappear, one by one. No one could find out where they had gone. Grief-stricken families searched the woods, the local buildings, and all the houses and barns, but there were no signs of the missing girls. A few brave souls even went to Bloody Mary's home in the woods to see if the witch had taken the girls, but she denied any knowledge of the disappearances. Still, it was noted that her haggard appearance had changed. She looked younger, more attractive. The neighbors were suspicious, but they could find no proof that the witch had taken their young ones. Then came the night when the daughter of the miller rose from her bed and walked outside, following an enchanted sound no one else could hear. The miller's wife had a toothache and was sitting up in the kitchen treating the tooth with an herbal remedy when her daughter left the house. She screamed for her husband and followed the girl out of the door. The miller came running in his nightshirt. Together they tried to restrain the girl, but she kept breaking away from them and heading out of town. the desperate cries of the miller and his wife woke the neighbors. They came to assist the frantic couple. Suddenly, a sharp-eyed farmer gave a shout and pointed towards a strange light at the edge of the woods. A few townsmen followed him out into the field and saw Bloody Mary standing beside a large oak tree holding a magic wand that was pointed towards the miller's house. She was glowing with an unearthly light as she set her evil spell upon the miller's daughter. The townsmen grabbed their guns and their pitchforks and ran toward the witch. When she heard the commotion, Bloody Mary broke off her spell and fled back into the woods. The far-sighted farmer had loaded his gun with silver bullets in case the witch ever came after his daughter. Now he took aim and shot at her. The bullet hit Bloody Mary in the hip and she fell to the ground. The angry townsmen leapt upon her and carried her back into the field, where they built a huge bonfire and burned her at the stake. As she burned, Bloody Mary screamed a curse at the villagers. If anyone mentioned her name aloud before a mirror, she would send her spirit to revenge herself upon them for her terrible death. When she was dead, the villagers went to the house in the wood and found the unmarked graves of the little girls the evil witch had murdered. She had used their blood to make her young again. From that day to this, anyone foolish enough to chant Bloody Mary's name three times before a darkened mirror will summon the vengeful spirit of the witch. It is said that she will tear their bodies to pieces and rip their souls from their mutilated bodies. The souls of these unfortunate ones will burn in torment as Bloody Mary once was burned, and they will be trapped forever in the mirror. The Stories of the Hitchhikers. Well, my uncle and I were driving down the street when we saw a man and a woman standing on the side of the road. The woman was bleeding and the man had a painful-looking injury to the side of his head. We stopped and asked if they needed a ride to the hospital, and the woman answered yes. So they got in the back seat, and we hurried to the hospital, all the while asking who they were and what happened. The woman said they were in a car wreck and that their car was in the creek right in the woods. I tried to talk to the man, but he didn't respond to any of my questions. He just sat there holding the woman's hand and telling her that she was getting help and that she would be okay, though the woman acted as if he weren't there. When we arrived at the hospital, my uncle and I ran to help them out of the car. As I was opening the door to help the woman out, I noticed that the man was gone. When my uncle opened the door to the other side, he asked me if he got out. I said no, he didn't. Where did he go? I asked the woman who the man was who was with her, and she said, no one was with me. And I said, yes, there was a man in the back seat holding your hand. Was it your husband? Where did he go? She said, sadly, my husband was killed in the accident. There was no one with me. I was alone. So when she checked in the hospital, me and my uncle went back to the place where we had found her. We got out of the car and the man was there. He said, thank you for helping my wife. And then he seemed to disappear. We found the car and his dead body crushed in the seat with a big hole in his head. We ran back to the car and drove home. That was the scariest thing that has ever happened to me. The Girl on the Stairs. This is a story told to me by my girlfriend. She lived in a house that had been around for many years. Her family moved in before she was born and have spent many a happy year there. The people who owned the house before her family were known to perform satanic chants and to try and bring spirits through to our world. From what her dad has told her, the family had the house blessed before starting a family in case any bad or evil souls were roaming the grounds of the house. I am not too sure if this is related to the story I was told, but take comfort in the fact this might explain the reason for the sightings and events within the house. Well, this is the reason they tell most people anyway. Her father actually saw a ghost, or as he described it, a gray shadow next to his bed. All he could do was move his eyes, and the rest of his body seemed cold and paralyzed. This scared him a lot, as you can imagine, so the blessing was arranged. My girlfriend sleeps in a room with her sisters, and she also has a young baby, which is 14 months old. Ever since she can remember, a shadow of a tall man has stood outside the bedroom, just standing there as if watching over them as they slept. She says that she doesn't fear the man, and he seems nice and polite as he moves to one side when someone wakes and needs to go to the bathroom or to get a drink. He never says anything and doesn't seem to be there during the daytime.
I have to say that I have not seen the man. I have stayed in the room and in the house and never experienced any sightings, although I do believe he was there. Both my girlfriend and her mother believe they are sensitives and they are able to see and feel ghosts and spirits. But it was my girlfriend's younger sister who had the most notable contact with one of the ghosts. When she was younger, I'm told about 4 or 5 years old, she started to cry for no reason. Her mother and a younger version of my girlfriend went to open the door to see what had happened. As they went to the door, the younger sister came in crying as she couldn't find her mommy. Every time anybody went to comfort her, she screamed, "Get away from me! I want my mommy! Who are you?" She wouldn't believe that they were her family. She was calling for her mommy again and again. Then she just stopped. The tears stopped and she was back to normal. To this day, she's now 15, she still doesn't remember it happening. This story, I think, anyway, is the reason for the title of this piece, as I'm sure you're thinking, what has this to do with the girl on the stairs, right? There is a little girl that my girlfriend sees sitting on the stairs at night sometimes. My girlfriend thinks the girl doesn't like her, as she always seems to have an angry face. She sits on the stairs and cries and stares through the banisters on the stairs. My girlfriend has tried talking to the little girl, only to be told she wants her mummy. There's always a sweet smell around when the little girl has been seen, yet only my girlfriend and her mother seem to be able to sense and smell it when she's around. Who's in the basement? I heard there's a house not far from where I go to school that has been abandoned for about 30 years. It was in good condition. It seems the owners took care of it. And one day a few of my friends went to go check it out. They invited me to go, but I didn't want to. So they left. About an hour and a half later, they came back. Everyone was pale or about to cry. "What happened?" I asked. Nobody answered the question for a few seconds. Then my friend Nick told me what they saw and heard. He told me they had walked into the house. It was empty and they thought about coming back into town. Then another friend found a door leading to the basement. They all began to walk down the stairs when they heard a baby start to cry and a rocking chair rocking. When they reached the bottom, there was no baby and no rocking chair. As they turned to leave, the sound of the rocking stopped and the baby was silent. As you can imagine, they ran out of the house. After they told me what had happened, we loaded into separate vehicles and drove to our favorite spot to hang out. While we sat there eating ice cream and talking about what happened, an old man overheard us. He said there was a family who had moved into the house. The mother had just had a baby. The mother would do laundry down in the basement, and while waiting, she would rock the baby to sleep. The father was away on business. A few nights before the father returned home, it caught fire and burned down. The mother and the baby died in the fire. The father was heartbroken and moved to another town without saying a word. After the old man left, we put the story together. We came to the conclusion that the mother and baby are still there waiting for the father to come home, never realizing that that will never happen.